Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. We're going to talk in this last part of our program about the appeal taking place in the trial of Adnan Syed, who in 1999 was convicted of murdering his ex-girlfriend, Haymin Lee, and has been the, which we covered way back then, and was the, and has been the part of the, not part, he's been the story built around the serial, a podcast, in 2015 that has been downloaded more than 70 million times, kind of raised the issue up again, which had something to do with why this appellate action is taking place. And it's been going on this week in Baltimore, and Stephen Klepper is lead attorney for Crammon and Graham Appellate Practice, and he's been following this case very closely and been writing about it. Doug Colbert joins us. He's been at the trial as well. He's professor of law at the University of Maryland Carey School of Law and was Adnan's lawyer for some part of the case. We'll find out about in a moment, as well back then. And you all can join us here at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at talk@steinershow.org. Tweet us at Mark Steiner. But let's take this first. Doug, let me just get that straightened out. You were his attorney when?
Well, I was his attorney in the first few weeks after he was arrested.
That's right.
In late February, early March of 1999. So that's 17 years ago when Adnan was 17 years old and he was a senior at Woodlawn High School, an honor student, someone who'd been accepted to the University of Maryland's pre-med program on a full scholarship.
So describe for us, Stephen, let me go to turn to you first and we'll go to Doug, but exactly what's happening with this case now? We saw the piece come out, Sarah Koenig's piece, Serial, about this case. There was one voice in there that's testifying now in this case, Asia McLean, that was her name then. What role did that have in this appellate and why is this happening?
This is a very strange posture for a proceeding, and it does require a lot of technical background, so I'll try to keep this at a layperson level. What happened is that Anon back in 2010 filed a petition for post-conviction relief, saying that Christina Gutierrez gave me ineffective assistance.
Who was his attorney at the time, who since passed away.
Correct. And
she was also very sick when she was his attorney.
She was. Yeah. And in 2012, the same judge, Judge Welch, held a series of hearings and held that Anon had not carried his burden of showing ineffective assistance of counsel. Anon then petitioned the Court of Special Appeals for leave to appeal, where that sat for some time. And then while that was pending, the Serial podcast happened and the case became a national phenomenon. And Anon's current lawyer, Justin Brown, filed a motion to supplement saying, I now have further information from Asia McLean herself that bolsters my case. And what the Court of Special Appeals said back in May was that we are going to send this back down. We're going to stay our appeal. It's still pending in the Court of Special Appeals, but we're going to send this back down to Judge Welch because he has wide discretion for him to decide whether it's right to reopen the record. And it went back down and he decided, yes, this added affidavit, I will hold a hearing on it. But also in what was a significant victory along the way for Anon's team, he further said, and I'm also going to allow the Justin Brown team to reopen the hearing for more testimony on the cell phone tower location evidence.
Which I want to come to in a moment. And Justin Brown being Adnan's attorney now.
Correct.
Right. So, and Doug, go ahead.
Yes, sir.
Go ahead, pick up. Because, and you've been at the trial itself today.
Yeah, and I just want to make clear, Mark, that when I represented Adnan, Chris Floor and I represented him at a bail hearing first month.
I remember this now, yes,
and
right.
When we represented him, it was for the purpose of gaining his release until this trial. There were about 80 or 85 people from his community, the Pakistani Baltimore community, who were present in court. About 600 people had signed a petition. And the people in court, about 8 to 10 of them, were willing to put up their home as collateral. The prosecution alleged that the people in court were there to help Adnan escape to Pakistan. And she made other charges that she later apologized for, about an uncle who would make him disappear, about other Pakistani men who were jilted lovers and who wound up killing their girlfriends. None of that turned out to be true, but at the hearing, the judge denied bail, and Adnan spent the next year in jail. Chris and I left the case after maybe the first month, and that's when Ms. Gutierrez took over. But I was present at the first trial that ended in a mistrial. I was there for about 90% of it. And this past week, starting last Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, and continuing today, I have been in the courtroom listening to the defense present some very strong grounds for seeking a new trial, and they include the failure to call or to even investigate alibi witnesses who would have testified, as one did last week, that Adnan was with her and other students at the library right next to Woodlawn High School. She and 41 other witnesses whom the investigator tried to contact, all but four of them said that they had never spoken to a defense lawyer. So one of the issues that I'm sure we'll talk about was a lawyer's duty to investigate an alibi defense. The other grounds, Mark, have to do with prosecutorial misconduct. There's an allegation that a trial prosecutor dissuaded Asia McClain, who was the alibi witness, from testifying at Adnan's trial. Ms. McClain had sent Adnan written letters on his second and third day in the Baltimore City Central Booking Jail, had sent him written letters, two of them, saying, "Don't you remember you were at the library between 2:15 and 2:40 p.m. in the afternoon, which is the time when the state alleges the tragic killing of Haman Lee occurred." And so she presented testimony last week, as well as one of our most esteemed criminal defense lawyers, Dave Irwin, who testified as an expert witness. And Dave is a former prosecutor and now a defense lawyer, who said that the failure to investigate is something that every lawyer must do, and it represents ineffective assistance. But the other piece of this, and I'm sure your guest will comment on this, is that you must not only show that there was an error, a constitutional error, but that it would have affected the outcome of the case.
So, and of course, we have the Maryland's Deputy Attorney General, Thruvendran Vignaraja, saying that there's overwhelming evidence that he is guilty of this crime, and that's some of the stuff he's been saying in court that I've been reading about. But
he's quite vigorous in asserting that the conviction should be affirmed, and I think each day it becomes more clear of how heavily invested is the state in rejecting Adnan's post-conviction claim.
So, Steve, let me bring you back in. Pick up from where Doug left off, I mean, on how you're seeing this.
Well, I'm looking at this primarily from an appellate lawyer's perspective. That's most of my practice. And so I was there for opening statements, and I was there for a fair portion of Asia Chapman's testimony, and I've heard some of the objections as they come along. And what's clear is that we're in for a long haul, because whichever side wins is extremely likely to appeal. And what you see are the lawyers on both sides making objections that are very detailed, responses that are equally detailed, all looking to make the right record for when Judge Welch makes his ruling and this goes back up to the Court of Special Appeals.
So I'm curious about this. Let me just also do a disclaimer. I mean, besides Doug being an old friend, the judge in this case is a friend of mine as well. I've known for almost 40 years. But so just to put that out there, that's a big full disclosure. But when I was reading the articles about what Judge Welch was doing in this case, I mean, he's already ruled in favor of this of the prosecution before.
Correct.
Exactly.
So how does that affect the nature of this case?
It makes it difficult, Mark, for anyone, in my opinion, to change an opinion that they already ruled upon. In this case, however, Judge Welsh is hearing testimony for the first time, not only from Asia McClain, also from an investigator who tried to see whether any of the people on this long alibi list had ever been contacted by the defense. And 37 of the 41 people said they had never heard from the defense team. That's Ms. Gutierrez's trial team. In addition to that, today and Friday, we also have testimony that there was evidence from the Bell phone towers that would have placed Adnan Syed in Lincoln Park at the time. A second person, Jay Wild, had borrowed Adnan's telephone, and the prosecution relied very heavily on the AT&T expert witness. That person now says that he was not given a disclaimer from AT&T indicating that incoming calls are unreliable for ascertaining the location of those calls.
Okay.
And so he submitted an affidavit to that effect.
So, and Steve, I'm curious, a couple of things here. I want to come back to what Doug just mentioned. But as someone who didn't follow this case before, in the very beginning, someone who just followed because you're an appellate lawyer and this is what you do when you write about these things and try these cases. So what are your thoughts now that you kind of looked at the background material and follow this as an appellate attorney? What is your what's your gut reaction or your intellectual reaction to analysis about the innocence or guilt here? Or can you even talk about that?
Well, let me tell you this. The entire post-conviction process looks very much to what the trial court holds. And we're lucky in this with all of this public scrutiny that we've got one of the best judges in Baltimore City here to listen to the case. And already he has shown he has an open mind because he didn't have to let in any of this additional evidence at all. When it was sent back down to him, they said, "We leave it to you, Judge Welch, to decide in the first instance whether you should hold another hearing." And he decided to do so, and he expanded it further. And that is much farther than most any of these types of cases get. And when you have somebody—
I'm not shocked when it comes to Marty Welch, knowing how ethical he is in life, that he would do something like this. But anyway, go ahead.
What this means is that Judge Welch, he has to deal with a presumption. The presumption until it's rebutted by the defendant is that anything that is pointed to as a default by the prosecutor is actually presumed to be a strategic choice until it's proved otherwise. And at the time, he said, "I don't have enough information." And at the time, Asia McClain Chapman was not available. And now he has her in front of him. And he is very well positioned to say, "This would have changed my opinion the last time," because previously he was basing it on lack of evidence, that, and now he has that evidence in front of him. And not only does he get to see Asia Chapman testify, but he has now heard from Dave Irwin, a very respected criminal attorney in town, who was able to offer an expert opinion that not only should Gutierrez have contacted her, but this witness has some of the hallmarks of what is an extremely persuasive witness in front of a jury. And for instance, the state is Asia McClain's letter previously had said, "Let's get in touch with the library because they might have some surveillance tapes that would prove that." And the state is very much saying, and this does appear to be the case, "Well, that doesn't help you at all, Anon, because the tapes were recycled about once a month and the tapes would have been erased." But what Dave Irwin has come in and said is, "But think about this. Asia had no way of knowing whether the tapes would have still been there. And she was saying at the time, let's check the tapes." And that is the hallmark of a witness who earnestly believes and is confident in what she is saying.
So Doug, what about the earlier testimony, though, in this case? And at the time we have left, about 8 minutes here, or maybe a little bit less. There's a couple things I want to get to. But what about the original testimony of Jay Wilds in the case, who was a friend of Anan Syed's, who said he helped bury the body or take the body to Lincoln Park? Now what about how that fits into all this?
Well, the state had two main pieces of evidence, Mark. They had no forensic evidence, so they have no eyewitness evidence to the killing itself. It was supposed to have taken place at 2:30 in the afternoon in front of the Best Buy in Randallstown in the parking lot, a place where lots of people would have heard or seen something. So they relied heavily on the cell phone tower's testimony that would have placed the cell phone in Lincoln Park, and on Jay Wild, who admittedly changed his testimony at least three times during the trial, and apparently even a fourth time not so long ago when he was interviewed by The Intercept. But I was present at the first trial for Jay Wild's testimony. Usually, Mark, and I certainly agree with your guest in terms of the additional information that Judge Welch has now, but I can only say that when somebody who's a witness changes testimony more than once, you're usually left with a reasonable doubt or serious questions about the reliability. But here was a situation where the witness admitted changing testimony a third time, and in very substantial respects in terms of where he first saw Adnan, where he first saw the crime victim. There were so many, and he was on the witness stand about 4 days. And I think I spoke to jurors afterwards because when the mistrial was called, it came as a real surprise. I had just left the courthouse to pick up my child from school, returned, saw the jury leaving, and asked members of the jury what was going on. And they said that the mistrial was there, and had they been asked to return a verdict, they said, we don't think the prosecution had a case, and we would have returned a not guilty verdict.
Hmm. And that comes into play. Mark, you were talking about the prosecutor through Vignaraja saying overwhelming evidence. And that is usually what a prosecutor says in trying to defend a verdict on appeal or resist post-conviction relief. But overwhelming evidence, the way that it usually plays out in the law, this doesn't quite fit that. This is certainly enough evidence to get to a jury, as was presented before under the relatively low standards. But this, the conviction did rely upon a witness who had changed his story multiple times. Usually the overwhelming evidence is something along the lines of there's a video camera showing the defendant, or his DNA was at the scene and there was no explanation provided by any of this. And if you come into court and say, oh, but something wasn't disclosed that would have shown that this one prosecution witness shouldn't be believed, the courts respond, well, yeah, but you haven't actually addressed what the evidence was against you. And so what Anand needs to prove this time around isn't that he would have won but for Gutierrez's ineffective assistance. He needs to show that there was a substantial possibility of a different result, which is something less than needing to prove that he would have won otherwise.
I'm sorry, folks. You can join us here, 410-319-8888. I guess we're wrapped up in this. I forgot to tell you the phones were open. 410-319-8888. As we look at this appeal of the case that has took the city and area by storm back in 1999 of Adnan Syed, who was convicted of murdering his ex-girlfriend, Ayman Lee. And this is a very odd state of legal affairs. There's kind of appeal going on at the moment, and its relationship to a National Public Radio broadcast serial that was produced by Sarah Koenig that opened this thing. Baltimore seems to be getting a lot of play from Mr. Gray to Mr. Ed and all the things that are exposing Baltimore to the world. So I'm curious about how both of you think this podcast that Sarah Koenig produced affected this case. You want to start talking? Then we'll go to
Well,
Steve.
I mean, I think without the podcast, Mark, you don't have the kind of public attention to the details of what took place that led to conviction and to the judge sentencing 17-year-old Adnan to life in prison plus 30 years. When Dave Irwin testified as an expert, he said it was a game changer to have heard Asia McClain's testimony in court last week. And I'm still waiting. I mean, Dave is going to be back on the witness stand this afternoon for cross-examination, which, as we know, really is the hallmark of credibility. But I'm also waiting to hear from the state's witnesses, and I'm very curious to see what they're going to be saying as well. The FBI agent has been fighting vigorously to say that the disclaimer from AT&T that was not included in the material given to the prosecution expert at the trial really was not all that important and would not have changed the expert's mind. I assume that other state witnesses are also going to disagree with Dave Irwin, and then it will be left for Judge Welsh to make an opinion, and I agree that whatever the opinion is, it's likely that there will be an appeal.
Frequently, these types of cases get lost. There's not a lot of attention paid to them. You don't even have a right to appeal when your post-conviction petition gets denied. And it is an interesting case study in what happens when a bright light gets shined on one of these cases. And here we know that the Serial podcast, which I did listen to, did an effective job of
– Sarah Kennedy does good work.
She did very good work. But the most important thing, we know it affected this case in the sense that it caused Asia McClain Chapman to come forward and say, I do want to talk to you and give this affidavit. And if it weren't for that podcast, this wouldn't have happened. And I've represented probably two criminal defendants in post-conviction cases where I wasn't able to get them relief, and I really felt like they were probably innocent and that what we really needed was something out there that would cause people to come forward and reevaluate what was a close case. And that is what's happening here. I don't think in the ordinary case you would have been able to get an affidavit from the prosecution's expert from trial to say, I don't have confidence in this anymore. What's also coming out is because there's the Truth and Justice podcast, there's the Undisclosed podcast, you've got a cottage industry of people looking to find exculpatory evidence. And if this ultimately winds up getting denied, none of this prevents a petition for actual innocence or a newly discovered evidence case. There's all kinds of evidence out there that some of the these enthusiasts are disappointed they're not hearing, but that's because it doesn't come down to the very narrow question in the present hearing, which was, did Christina Gutierrez provide ineffective assistance?
That really is fascinating. Of course, and if it's just going to return, that means they have to once again find out who did kill Heyman Lee.
Oh, and there are plenty of theories out there.
I'm sure there are. Some people may, and that this is a fascinating case. Doug, we have about 2 minutes left, a little bit less, actually. You have a thought on what we just said and where this might go?
Well, I'm really waiting to hear from the trial prosecutor, Kevin Urich, who has repeatedly defended the conviction and has made many strong claims against the defense bringing this post-conviction proceeding. So he's very heavily invested here. The real issue is when his testimony conflicts with Asia McClain's, because Ms. McClain made it clear that she had spoken to him. He said it was a 5-minute conversation. She actually got the telephone records to indicate it was a 35-minute conversation. And amazingly, she took notes during that conversation from years ago in which she felt that the prosecuting attorney had convinced her not to testify, saying it was a slam dunk conviction.
And kept the notes.
And she kept the notes. She was a remarkable witness because she had the calm and presence to testify without a lot of thinking. It was like a very spontaneous Q&A. And I think everyone in that courtroom had to be impressed with her truthfulness. The prosecutor tried to show that she had a faulty memory.
Well, this is fascinating. We'll definitely come back to the two of you during the course of this trial and see what happens after Judge Welsh makes his decision and talk a bit about where this goes from here. You just heard Doug Holbrook, professor of law at the University of Maryland Carey School of Law, and Stephen Klepper, who's a lead attorney at Kremen and Graham's appellate practice, who's been following the Adnan Syed case as well. And we'll be following it. And this will be on our website. And you can see things that Stephen Klepper has written and where this is all going. So Stephen Klepper and Doug Holbrook, thank you both so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much, Mark.
And we'll be coming back to this. So on our way out of here, I'll remind you the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by the Maryland State Education Association. From school funding to testing, you can learn more about the important issues affecting Maryland students, parents, and schools by visiting the Maryland State Education Association's website at MarylandEducators.org. That's MarylandEducators.org. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Stephanie Mavronis and Mark Gunnery. Our engineer is Andrea Melton. Our interns are Sianna Grease, Monifa Wilson, Calvin Perry, and Morgan Barber, who is with us today. Our theme music is by Wal Matthews of Clean Cuts. Send me your thoughts about today's program to talk@steinershow.org. And to podcast the Mark Steiner Show, share it with your friends, visit us on the web at steinershow.org, or listen to us via your favorite podcasting app. And for your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA, 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.